If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, thanks for staying with us. This is that favorite time of my day where we speak books. And today we don't only have, as I said, an enthusiast. We have someone who is herself a writer, published author, has been writing for yonks, and also has a fantastic podcast called The Hidden Lives of Writers. Fiona Snickers is on the line with us this evening. Fiona, a very good evening, and thank you so much for joining us.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Oh my goodness. It's wonderful to talk to you right now. Actually, it's great to talk to you after the conversation. If you were listening to that conversation about Trump, I just want to pick your brain on that one, because it's reminding me of your book, The Hidden. And your timing, when I look at what's happening right now, was impeccable. How did you, when you reflect on what's happening in the US right now, I mean, do you get chills, you know, on your spine, so to speak?
I do get chills, and really not in a good way.
Yeah.
The fact that my book managed to predict so accurately what was coming just gives me no satisfaction at all, because it is all so scary. It all feels so dystopian. It is really antithetical to everything that I believe in. And I'm following the news on a daily basis with a sense of dismay, really.
I just wonder about that, the writer's instinct, whether that was that, because I suppose many can say, if you've been following American politics and you saw what was happening, you may have predicted something like this may have happened. But what was it about the moment that made you write this book? I believe it was during COVID times that made you feel like, I need to write this. I am South African. I'm not American. I'm here. And I suspect you were not even sure this was going to be published. I mean, you know, you are not in the US, so to speak. You're not American yourself. What was it about what was happening in the US that pushed you to write that book?
It was the first Trump administration, and I wrote as though this book would never be published. Mm. I wrote it as a form of therapy for myself, just trying to imagine a world past the Trump years, when maybe things would be a little bit better and kinder, but where there was still this threat of an emerging right wing in America. And I wrote it to work out my fears on the page. And I really had no idea how bad things could become. I think the writer's imagination, as you said, does tend to go to some dark and dystopian places. And I think that's what I was living out. But honestly, what's happening now is something that I don't think anybody could have exactly predicted.
You say therapeutic, but was there something you were feeling? You know, is it like an outlet where you feel like there's a little bit of, I don't know, rage or something that makes you want to pour all that you're feeling out into something? Was that sort of the feeling?
Yes, rage and fear at the way that the world seemed to be going, at the rise of the right wing and these tendencies which seemed to me to have some connection to fascism. And I was very glad when it appeared all to go away for 4 years. Mm. And now it's back, and it's bolder and more active than ever before. And I don't know what to say. I don't know what to think. I don't know how to feel. I might need to write another book just to help myself get through it.
Well, I mean, for those who are listening, the book is called The Hidden by Fiona, who we're speaking to right now. And I'll give you more details. But this is the moment. So Fiona, I feel sometimes that every book has its timing. You know, sometimes books come at a time when it's just not the right time for that particular book. It's a good book, but, you know, it's just not the right time. Geez, your book right now is a good one to get out of the shelf or go get a copy, you know. And you know, when you reflect right now, I think I asked you earlier, you know, whether you get chills down your spine. But do you now want to go back, and do you want a sequel? How are you going to react to this moment?
Well, the book ended on not exactly a cliffhanger ending, yeah. but a bit of a surprise ending that raised various questions. Mm. And it definitely left room for a sequel. Mm. So that is something that I'm writing right now. Yeah. It's something that I'm working on. I've got a first draft. Yeah. I'm busy knocking that into shape. So readers can look forward to a sequel to that in the near future.
I like that. Okay. Okay, fantastic. How do generally stories, though, come to you? Do they come or are you reacting to mostly feelings that you have about a particular moment, like we're speaking about this book now?
I've always got ideas in my head, and some of them go nowhere. You know, I work them out in my mind, and I realize that they don't have the legs or the potential to keep going. And some ideas, the ones that stick with me, are the ones that I will work out into a full-length novel. So it could be something I saw on social media, something in the news media. It could be another piece of fiction that I'm responding to. I'm a great reader, especially of South African fiction, so I often get my ideas from there. Also, just from eavesdropping, from going around the world, hearing other people's stories, it's all fodder for the writer. It's all stuff that might feed into a book one day.
Your decision to put together, you and Gail, The Hidden Lives of Writers, what were you hoping to achieve with that? It's wonderful, by the way, getting into the heads of writers.
It was based on our own curiosity about how other writers think and work, and our desire to give a platform to South African writers. Mm. Now, there are a lot of short form interviews for authors. You know, when you bring a new book out, there's a kind of a circuit, TV, radio, short form podcasts, news interviews, etc. But there wasn't really a long form platform where you could sit down for a full hour and chat in depth to an author about their new book, their career, their backlist, their writing process, where they get their inspiration from, what their best tips are for aspiring writers. So we wanted to create that platform, and we're very proud of what we've done. We're busy recording season 5 of The Hidden Lives of Writers. We've got such great writers lined up for this season. So we're having fun. It's almost more like fun than it is a job.
Well, it sounds like fun, and it's what a gift it is. Let's talk about your list for us, or reading list. Where do you want to start with the Playing Flirty?
Yes. Let's start off light and fun with a book that's just been released this year. Yeah. The publisher's name is Forever, and the book is called Playing Flirty by Shamiz Patel. Shamiz is known as a fantasy writer. Mm. She wrote the Celine trilogy of fantasy novels. The first one's called The Last Feather, and all her fantasy novels had an element of romance. Mm. And now she's kind of rebranded herself with a new publisher, and she's writing contemporary fun romance, which is such a huge genre at the moment. Yeah. If you think of people like Emily Henry and others, romance is just very big at the moment. Yeah. So Playing Flirty, the two main characters are called Rose and William, and they both are game designers. Mm. Rose is a board game designer, and she knows William as her rival on game nights. Mm. She and her friends get together for regular game nights, and she and William have an ongoing rivalry as gamers. Mm. And Rose secretly enters a board game that she has created into a competition, but she finds that she needs William's help in order to win. So it's a kind of rivals to lovers plot. There's lots of amusing banter. There's lots of workplace banter. Mm-hmm. It's got the geeky angle of the game designing, which I think a lot of people will enjoy. Yeah. It just is a fun, flirty, lovely, romantic read that I think would be so enjoyable for anyone who appreciates the genre.
It's it's fresh, isn't it? It's fun, it's light, it's, as you said, geeky. And it's one of those things because, the as you said, you know, this genre is quite big at the moment, but there's only so much you can do with romance. But she's managed to work with this genre in a light, easy, and you can still stay with the book. You don't get bored. I found that really refreshing.
Yes, refreshing. That's a very good word for it. It's a fun and refreshing book with a lovely new take on an old genre.
Yeah. All right. White Chalk. Oh, I love Terry Ann Adams.
Yes, me too. I'm a big fan. So White Chalk is actually a collection of short stories published by Jacana. It won both an NIHSS Humanities Award and a Sala Award for Best Short Story Collection in, I think, 2022. And it very much deals with aspects of life in and around El Dorado Park, which is where Terry Ann grew up. And it just adds some much needed nuance to a community that has probably been portrayed in a very one-dimensional way in the media. It adds nuance and depth and complication. Some of the stories are funny. Some of them are heartbreaking. Some of them are just quirky. They deal with so many different issues. You know, Terry Ann writes about her own experience of being a person with albinism. She writes about disability. She writes about the queer experience. And she, in her stories, moves so effortlessly in and out of different narrative voices. It's almost as though she inhabits the people that she is speaking as, all these different diverse members of the community. I want to say it's a joy, but it's more than a joy. It's a complicated joy because it will break your heart. Yeah. It will make you think.
Yeah.
And it will amuse you and fill you with joy.
Yeah. It gives you, in fact, all the spectrums of your feelings will come up in this book. You will giggle. You will laugh. You'll feel joy. You will feel sorrow. You will be angry. All of those things. And exactly as you said, you know, it for me is an honor to have a work like this, because to your point about one-dimensional stories of a particular people, this is just such a wonderful way of showing that, look, man, these are complete communities. They're complex, like all of us are complex, and they need to be reflected that way. So it's absolutely wonderful in that sense.
Oh, I agree. I really, really admired this collection, and I can see why it won those awards.
Spud is back. Spud is back.
Spud is back indeed. Spud the Reunion by John van der Reit, published towards the end of last year by Pan Macmillan. And, you know, I spoke to John about the where this book came from, and he had such a good idea of how to breathe new life into the Spud character. Because when we left him in Exit Pursued by a Bear, Spud was finishing matric and he was about to go out into the wide world. And these Spud books were so very much tied to the school environment that it was difficult to imagine how the story could continue once he left school. And he had such a great idea to focus on Spud's 10-year school reunion when he and all the members of the Crazy Eight and all his friends and his whole matric class are going back to school for the 10-year reunion. And just about everyone is hiding some kind of a struggle, perhaps Spud himself more than anybody else. And it all comes out during this reunion weekend. And another fun thing about it is how John created the voice of the adult Spud, because we all got to know the teenage Spud very well. And he had a kind of teenage voice. And now he's an adult man, still a young man, but he's an adult. And John inhabits that voice so perfectly. It's still fun and funny. It's still insightful. And just like the earlier Spud books, there is seriousness and tragedy mixed in amongst the comedy. And this is a book for grown-ups. It's a book for people who were fans of the original series and are perhaps more grown up now and more aware of adult challenges. So he's just done a really good job of it. And I enjoyed and admired this book a lot.
Now, I thought it was a brilliant. I also thought, boy, I mean, don't you feel like this is, I wish I had that idea. That was my sense of this book. Like, my goodness, he was on the money with this idea of bringing the reunion, you know, and getting them back together after 10 years. And then one of my absolute favorites at the moment, The Comrade's Wife, Barbara Boswell. And I have to tell you, Fiona, I think in the past month, we've had 4 people recommend this book. So it's hot at the moment.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah. It was published last year by Jacana, yeah, and it is also one of my current favorites. Mm. The main character is Anita, who's an academic, and she has a kind of second chance romance, a sort of middle-aged romance with Neil, who's a senior member of an unnamed liberation political party. Mm. And it's just sparks and fireworks and a meeting of minds, and they come together. And it seems like Anita has finally got her happy ending. Mm. But Neil turns out to be not exactly the way he is portraying himself to her. He's leading a double life in more than one way. Mm. And as Anita doubles down on her marriage to him and increasingly commits to it, she becomes isolated from her former life, from her friends, from her family. And she starts finding out more and more about Neil, the real Neil, and the life that he's hiding from her. Mm. And she has to decide to prioritize her own moral values, to make decisions about what she will and won't be prepared to put up with. Mm. And then, when she really is deeply enmeshed in the situation, she has to decide what she is going to do about it and what she can do about it. Mm. And at that point, the book becomes so clever and so interesting when you see how Anita starts becoming proactive rather than reactive in the situation. Mm. And she decides to do something. Mm. And that, to me, was the most satisfying part of the book.
It's a brilliant book. All I have to say, it's a brilliant book and people need to get it. Before I let you go, I know it's a Tuesday, Fiona, but I'm going to ask what you usually discuss at the very beginning of your podcast all the time. How has your writing week been?
It's been interesting. I am actually working on some academic work at the moment. So I've been diving into other South African writers' works, particularly writers of historical fiction, like Craig Higginson with his latest book, The Ghost of Sam Webster. Mm. I've been dividing into that and trying to find my academic voice again, because I'm doing some academic writing. Mm. And the last time I did this was quite a long time ago. Mm. So at the moment, I've put my creative writing temporarily to one side, and I'm trying to find my voice again as an academic writer, and it's quite challenging.
Is it challenging and fun, though?
It's challenging and fun. It's like flexing an old muscle that you forgot about and has got a bit weak and needs to get strong again. But I'm enjoying it, and I'm also finding it to be, a challenge.
It's
is
a
all
challenge.
I can say.
Fiona, lovely, lovely talking to you. We love the podcast. Thank you so much for making time to talk to us. And we will have you for a full conversation on both The Hidden and the sequel. How soon will we get that sequel?
Or one can never say with publishing schedules, you can never say, but hopefully in the next year or two.
Well, looking forward to that. Thank you very much, Fiona. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. So let me just give you quickly the list, everybody. So it's Playing Flirty. That's Shamiz Patel. That's the writer. And the second book was White Chalk by Terry Ann Adams. Third one was Spud, The Reunion, John van der Rijt. And the last one was The Comrade's Wife by Barbara Boswell. We've spoken about this one before. So that's the list, and we'll put it up on our social media platforms. I'm afraid we've lost all our time now, and that brings us to the end of the show. So I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.